If you have a desire that you believe in, talk about it, because resources will start appearing. People will say, I know somebody, or I have a connection to a company that does this, or you, it's just crazy how things just mushrooms of opportunities start appearing when you start putting out there what you're doing.
Welcome to Lessons in Leverage, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of success. We'll help you unlock the secrets of leverage so you can amplify your impact in the world. Here is your host, Spencer Lowe.
All right. Well, welcome back to another episode of Lessons in Leverage. I'm excited today to be here with Tanya Vucetic, who has a really cool story to share and a lot of good lessons to share with us. She's a founder of a company called Blockforms, who are helping businesses that are very form-heavy to consolidate and optimize that experience, really gain leverage in their business and create a better experience for their users so that you don't have to fill out redundant information over and over again. And so really excited to get into a little bit about what you're doing there. But before we do, Tanya, I want to go back and take it from really, you know, where you got started out. If that's okay. So thank you, first of all, for being here. But I'd love to go back into your story and hear a little bit about how you got started.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I mean, we can start at any point. Do you want to start with the founding of the business or more my mindset back in the day that led to that? Where should we begin?
Yeah, I'd love to hear, where were you at before you started the business? I think this is an important sort of place to start because, you know, people go on lots of different paths. But somewhere in their journey, I think there's a bit of a transition, you know, and this applies to any kind of growth, right? You start realizing there's an area you need to grow in, and then there's this culminating moment where something shifts for you, and then that unlocks maybe a new perspective. And so I'd love to hear for you, you know, just to maybe share with the audience a little bit about your background, your education, and where you were at before you decided to start a company, and how did you... What led up to that? What was that shift for you that got you to start thinking about maybe doing something bigger?
Yeah, okay. Happy to share. So I grew up very middle-class American. You get good grades in high school. You go to a good college. You get a good job. And then I don't know what, right? So
it all just magically work out and your student loans disappear and you're just in perfect condition. I think that's how it's supposed to. And then kids appear and a white picket fence is there. I think that's how that's supposed to work.
Yeah. And then at that point, you know, following the rules, you're maybe in your 30s then, but we live well into our 60s, 70s. So like, what happens for the next 40 or so years? I don't know. And so I followed the rules, got a great job and found myself itching for more adventure and always, you know, okay, well, grad school is a next logical step on the map and not deviating too far from the mold. So I went to business school, but I decided to make it an adventure. And so I did business school in Hong Kong. I sold everything that I owned and I moved to Asia and totally immersed myself in a new environment. And
was that your first time leaving the country or did you have other international experiences prior to that?
Father is from Serbia. My mother's from Mexico. I have spent quite a bit of time in Europe and around a variety of different cultures growing up predominantly in Northern California, which is very mixed. However, I had never lived overseas and I launched myself into what was as far and different from my norm as possible. So I found myself in Hong Kong. And admittedly, you know, this is an American stereotype. My geography is not the best. I couldn't even point it out on a map when I moved there. I just decided, okay, I got into this good school. It's ranked and sold everything I own, got on a plane and went for it. So yeah, thank you. And I will say that that wasn't my first curiosity in entrepreneurship. I did watch, you know, TV shows as a kid and like, oh, do I want to go into crime solving and forensic science, or do I want to become this like really incredible lawyer that like defends humanity, you know, all that daydreaming we do as a kid. And entrepreneurship was on that list, but I was so far, it was so far from the realm possible when I was a younger adult. And moving to Asia and being around other students in business school whose families own businesses, or they were already entrepreneurs themselves, and different cultures that are very entrepreneurial really changed that mindset for me. Like, why not me? And this is possible, and people do live like this. So
that's, I want to just and focus on that for a second, because it's a pattern I've seen time and time again meeting other entrepreneurs, that it's so hard if you don't know someone and see it in real practice. You can read every book, you can see people on YouTube, you can know that there's this thing called entrepreneurship that people are doing, and for a certain subset of people, that will be enough for them to just take the leap and go do it. But for a much larger subset of people, it just doesn't feel real yet until you really build those relationships. And what I love about your story is that it doesn't sound like you went to that school thinking, oh, I'm going to meet these entrepreneurs, but rather, hey, if I push myself outside of my comfort zone, if I go do something that's very unique, different, go to a different place that I'm unfamiliar with, that willingness to just try something unique and get exposed to new things opens up that realm of possibility. And then you found yourself meeting people who could introduce you to totally different backgrounds, lifestyles. And I just think that's such a critical learning. We talk about like diversity. It's become such a buzzword, but like that's the real power of diversity, is that like if you only stay in a place where you see the same things, and like Northern California is diverse, but still we fall into these habits of like the people at my church or my community or my whatever organizations or causes I'm a part of, they all are kind of doing similar things to me. And I just don't know anyone who does something different. And so I love that breakthrough for you, because if someone's listening to this, they need to think about, man, what's that step I could take to go out of my comfort zone and go meet some people from different backgrounds and start to really awaken to this idea of like, oh, there's other ways that people live. So anyways, didn't mean to interrupt, but I just get so excited about
that. Yeah, you just put yourself in a different environment and you never know what can come from it, right? One of my friends always says, and is in line with the theme of leverage, like your network is your net worth. So you don't know who you don't know yet. And so get out there and meet them, and you never know what one thing is going to lead to another.
And just out of curiosity, not to jump too far ahead, but I'm curious, when you look back at your time in business school, would you say the education, like the nuts and bolts, was more valuable, or was the relationships and the perspective change more valuable? What did you get the most value out of?
Totally the latter. I mean, my accounting classes, or you know, I there was a lot of value in like the negotiation courses, but again, the thing that was cool about that business program, it was that the emphasis was on business in Asia. So learning how different cultures receive negotiation and how West versus East styles of communication, that was really interesting. But I think that while that was taught in the classroom, it was really learned in the latter half of what you described, the cultural and the experiences and the people that I got to know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they go to make a decision, maybe about grad school or about school in general, especially as there's an increasing sentiment, they're like, oh, school's a ripoff and all this kinds of stuff. I think there's plenty of viable paths that are not formal education. But if you're going to go get a formal education, I think that that's something people should weigh really heavily. Is who are the people I'm going to meet? What are the relationships I'm going to make? What am I going to be exposed to culture experience-wise? Because a lot of what you learn in business school, you could learn from books or you could learn online, but won't get those same opportunities for the relationships or the same cultural experience. And so there's just so much power in that. And so something to think about. But all right, so you get that experience in business school. You start to grasp it like, hey, there's some other ways I could live my life. So then what trajectory did that set you on? Did you still sort of continue for a while on a more traditional path, or what came out of that for you?
I certainly did. And I came from aviation, loved aviation, the valuation of commercial aircraft, purchases, sales, and leases, and I wanted to stay in it. The thing that I loved about it was the global aspect of it, but I also, in parallel, was learning that the most important resource to me is my freedom and flexibility of where to be, how I spend my time, And so I was giving up one love for aviation to really become myself of this career that to me felt freeing. So after aviation, I learned how to code in order to become a remote worker and create this lifestyle that it didn't matter where I physically was. And I became a data scientist. So I was working in data science consulting for 6+ years, working for different large enterprises. And I could do so from wherever. I'd be in Peru, I'd be in India, I'd be home connecting with the people that I love and managing time zones. So that technical skill set then led me to, okay, it would be nice to not clock in on someone else's terms, but on my own terms. And then there I was like, okay, cool. I have this business experience, understanding finance, valuation, and all that. But then also this technical skill set, I can really start to see the pieces of the puzzle fit together. And then this opportunity to build Blockforms came to me through my co-founders and I mutual friend who said, I have a buddy who has a good idea. You're an operator and a workhorse that's creative. Do you want to meet him and see if you're interested in teaming up with him? And the answer was loud screaming, hell yes. And I was introduced to this person that has a skill set that I totally don't have. He's an insurance broker. He's a sales guy. He's so slick he could slide uphill. And we were good partners. And then there was the developer designer brought in, which also isn't my skill set. He can make things really beautiful and easy to interpret for someone looking at and interacting with a software for the first time. So yeah, it just, I positioned myself well to receive this opportunity through my skill set and network and communicating that this is what I wanted. That's another thing that's really important. Like, if you have a desire that you believe in, talk about it, because resources will start appearing. People will say, I know somebody, or I have a connection to a company that does this, or it's just crazy how things just opportunities start appearing when you start putting out there what you're doing.
I love that. I love that metaphor of mushrooms appearing. That's very, that type of spontaneous growth is just really a great metaphor. There's so many things to unpack from what you just said that I think are valuable for the audience, but this pattern, there's a pattern you just described that's extremely powerful, and that is you got clear first on what you wanted in each of these instances. See, a lot of people fall in love with kind of their perceived career path. A lot of people will be like, aviation's so great, and so I'm so romantic about aviation, I just have to be in aviation forever. And then now that limiting belief, they might also really wish they could work remote, but I'm in love with aviation, so I have to do it. And so now I'm stuck and I never find something different because I'm in love with just one half instead of really falling in with what you truly want. And so as you are looking inside and saying, all right, what is it I really want? Like, I do like aviation. What do I really want? As you got clear on that, that clarity involved, you know, exploration, travel, like going and having these unique experiences, it involved things that would be even more fulfilling to you. And then the question was, now, if that's what I want, what skills do I need and what relationships I need to make that happen? And so if you never get clear about what you want, then it's hard to know what skills to work on. And people go about this backwards, like, I'm trying to develop the right skills so that I can advance my career. And I'm like, to what? Because if you're trying to be an accountant and you're learning this, you know, you're off learning design, well, you're not going to get to being an accountant. If you're trying to be a designer and you're off learning numbers, just may not get where you want to go. So getting really clear about that first, and then you had such a strong why behind it as well. This is the other thing people miss, where once they know what they want, they may not know why they want it. For you, that why seems to have been freedom-based. I enjoy freedom. I enjoy travel. These are the things that are going to be deeply meaningful to me in my life. You had mentioned, you know, getting to be around and near loved ones and family and connections. So if you know that that's the why, now there's this really powerful reason to go develop a very specific set of skills and to start building relationships that could support that goal. And so it all just sort of cascades. And so someone could look at your journey and say, gosh, this is this is kind of like all over the place. She's in aviation. She went to business school. She learned some programmatic and like technical skills, then was doing consulting on data science, and now she's a CEO. Like, this doesn't make it, but that's because they're trying to make sense out of the path instead of making sense of what, why, and then all the rest of the path is just how to get there. And that's such a powerful pattern for people to think about in their life. If you're not clear about what, if you're not clear about why, then the skills to develop in the relationships are just going to feel too hard. You're not going to know where to go.
Yeah, or where to start. I think it's worth diving in. You said, like, I got very clear on what was important to me. And I know for some listeners, they're probably like, well, how do I get clear on what's important to me?
And yeah, how did you?
Sitting with myself, getting rid of all of the noise. So moving to Asia, where I don't know anybody and selling everything, sounds like a very sexy, exciting story, but it's also really lonely, right? Like, I had to go there and put myself out there, and who's the person I was putting out there, and that's where I really took myself and put myself back together. So it's putting yourselves in these scenarios. Like, people say, get out of your comfort zone. Like, I could not stress enough how valuable that is. Like, and it doesn't have to be as extreme as what I did, but if you're still where you grew up, go meet new people. So in the scenario of where I grew up in Northern California, instead of hanging out in one suburb or city, go to another, join a meetup. Like, feel weird. Feel that, like, especially people who are interested and have a big dream, but feel so uncomfortable with new people because they've only been around the people they've always known. Be uncomfortable. That's how you get clear on what's out there and who you are, because we're all a product of our environment as well, right? So I got to be around a bunch of entrepreneurs, and then all of a sudden I gravitated towards that. I got to be around a lot of really well-traveled people. Now that's important to me. And there are scenarios where I've been around groups where their lifestyle or goals weren't for me. You know, it's being exposing yourself to more and more, and that's how you get really clear.
That's such a great insight. So a couple tactics that I heard in there were, one, cutting out all the noise. There's a lot of noise in our life, stuff, existing relationships, existing, and it's not to say don't value your existing relationships, but the comfort zone you're living in. It's interesting. Well, before I share, I guess the second thing, the two major things there was cutting out all the noise. And then the second one was changing your environment, you know, putting yourself in an environment that might be uncomfortable, that will allow you to be exposed to different people, different ways of thinking. Those are two really powerful strategies if someone's trying to figure out what it is, get clear about their own direction, purpose, who they are, any of those things. For me, one of the things I noticed, I've done a lot of experiments in my life, just trying to, you know, figure myself out and improve. And one that I did a while back was to get rid of my cell phone. So I just lived off of an Apple Watch. And so I was like, I'm not going to have a phone for a few months. I'm just going to use a watch. And let's see what happens. Because I had tracked back so many of the unhappiness things in my life to this to the phone. I'm like, there's just so many things that tie back to a phone that I don't like. So when I did that experiment, one of the things that I found was the number of times a day where I would sort of reach for my phone to get away from my emotions was staggering. Specifically, and like some of the weird examples were, if I go to the bathroom, why am I getting my phone out? Normally, back before phones, this is when I would just sit there and think about my life. Or I get on an elevator and someone else gets in. I don't need anything on my phone. Now is a perfect opportunity to meet a new person, look in their eyes, say hi, spread some happiness, make a connection, and yet I'm going to my phone. There's a little social awkwardness or uncomfortability, and I'm leaning to the phone. It makes me feel good, makes me feel safe. And it's created this little dopamine blanket that I think we all carry around, where that's just one of the things, but there's a lot of ways you do this in your life. When you're uncomfortable, our default is to go to something. It gives us a little hit, a little dopamine, a little comfort, a little love, a little something where we can just feel good again. Instead of sitting in that emotion and really peeling back the layers of, like, why do I feel this way? And who am I? And exploring ourselves, we just don't do it enough. And so I love this idea of how you sold all your stuff, you changed the environment radically, and you put yourself in an environment where it's like, now I really have to confront this. And maybe for some people, that's just getting rid of a phone for a while. Maybe that's putting themselves in new groups. Maybe it's doing what you did, moving to a different country or going to a school that really takes them away. But that's such a great pattern, because I do think there's a lot of people wondering, man, how do you figure that out?
Yeah. I hear so many of these buzzwords out there about, you know, how exactly what we're talking about. There's a lot of, you need to do this, but there's no how. And so I really wanted to make sure that we touched on the how. And another thing to add is just like, let yourself be bored. That's where creativity is born, right? Like, just sit there and be bored instead of filling the space.
Yeah, that's so powerful. That was another takeaway I had when I did that experiment with the phone, is like, once you get bored, all of a sudden, you're actually really motivated. Like, your brain just gets being bored in minutes, and it's like, hey, I have a great idea. Here's an idea. Here's something you should do. And you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this was in here. And so you just get surprised by, like, you left space for it and things started happening.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me, when I was a kid, we unlearned so many great things about being a kid. But one of them is like, as a kid, if you gave me free time, I needed nothing. I could just go outside and I was playing. I was having fun for infinite hours. Like, until you yelled at me to come home, I could just play. And now as an adult, like, when I go to have fun, I don't ever think like, hey, I'm going to have nothing and I'm just going to play for 3 hours. Like, that sounds crazy. I'm like, are we going to a movie? Are we going to this? Are we going to get food? Are we going to, what experience are we going to have? And it's kind of crazy. And it's like, hey, why don't you just have fun? Why don't you just enjoy the moment? Why don't you just go be creative? And so, yeah, I've certainly suffered from not giving myself enough of that boredom.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing those out.
Of course. And that's where that entrepreneurial spirit and ideas are born. It's sometimes finding an inefficiency at work and again, it's like daydreaming. What kind of life do I want to have? And that's not to say the life of an entrepreneur is glamorous. It's really tough, and there's a lot of sacrifice, but there's a lot of looking inward. So you really figure out who you are through that process.
For sure. Yeah, that was something I noticed when I first started my company, was that before that, I always said, like, I don't ever blame anyone else. Like, I always take responsibility. But then once it was just me and I was working every day by myself, I was like, oh man, I think I was blaming a lot of people. Subconsciously, I was sort of being like, well, that's not my fault. That's not my fault. But when it's just me, it's like, oh no, it's all my fault. If I don't have work, it's because I didn't sell work. And if I didn't do a good job, it's because I didn't do a good job. It's just no one else to blame. That's a humbling experience to go through, where you realize, no, it's kind of all my fault. And so yeah, it can be a big mirror for you to reflect on. Well, let's maybe transition a little bit into what that shift was for you then. So we got, I think, through some really important parts early in your journey here that helped shape the person, that gave you the clarity to know that this was the opportunity you were going to want to take up. And so you got introduced to the right people. You were passionate about the idea for Blockforms. Tell me what it was like to start that business. What were some of the big changes for you? Learnings, what were some of the big building blocks, mindsets, skills that then you had to develop to go from kind of digital nomad consultant to, you know, CEO of a startup? What was that shift like for you?
I mean, we're 5 years into that. I think I'm still shifting, but to describe the beginning, I was very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, because at that point it was still an idea and it wasn't real. And as it got more real, I was facing so many insecurities about, okay, do I start talking about this? Maybe I shouldn't, because what if it fails? Should I, you know, I think I'm capable of doing something, going to try and do it. Oh my goodness, I don't have the skill set for this. Is it worth me learning this skill set or finding the appropriate person to master this task? There's a lot of looking in the mirror when starting a business, and you really learn quickly what you're capable of, or hopefully you do, what your skill set is and what isn't, and then delegate and manage and work and collaborate appropriately. So the beginning was very like, okay, who knows how to do what? Let's just go and try and build and We learned a lot of hard lessons, took some shortcuts that we shouldn't have, instead of building things out all the way. We should have collected.
Well, when you were starting out, what was the background of your co-founders? So, you know, it's, you're starting out and we know a lot about your background. It sounds like you had mentioned one of your co-founders being a salesperson, great on that side. And I think you said there was a third co-founder that was more design oriented. Is that right?
Yes. So the sales co-founder has been insurance and is still in insurance. So he's the one who birthed the idea, being someone who reckons with a lot of paperwork to underwrite business. And he's the one who really defined the required user experience, helped us understand the problem that we were solving, helped us mimic how a user does work day to day. Our goal wasn't to totally disrupt their business, but to mirror how they do business. So it would just expedite the sales cycle, not completely change it. And then our CTO is very much still a 100% digital nomad that works at bizarre hours of the night, like that stereotypical developer that, anyways, he's brilliant and full stack developer and designer. So that was our little triangle in the beginning. And we were all introduced by a friend. We didn't know each other before, so there was no friendship before starting. And 4 or 5 years, I hit the jackpot in terms of their value system and sticking it out through the hard times. And the person who introduced us had originally joined, but then bowed out because it was such a big commitment. Anything you read out there that's like side hustle or get rich quick, like I've been building this on the side because I had to. I didn't have a pot of gold that I was living off of. I had to work to sustain myself and pay off my mountains of student loans and still enjoy life while building a business. So anyways, I just lost
it. Not sexy necessarily, and it's a lot of work, but it's been for you over the last 5 years.
Yes, and sorry, I just reeled it in. To really effectively scale a business, I think starting doing it part-time is possible, but you eventually you need to take the leap, and that's where I'm at right now. I'm about to take the leap, do this full-time, and part of the journey has been getting the confidence to do that. And so I've very recently just owned it. I'm like, I'm the CEO. I've raised money. I have a working product. I have customers. What am I waiting for? And so I'm right on the precipice of taking that leap.
What was your story before when you weren't really confident to take that leap, or it was holding you back? What was some of your internal dialogue that you were struggling with? Because it sounds like you had a pretty big breakthrough there just recently of kind of proving to yourself, and I think this is a common thing for every entrepreneur, is like, we're all sort of on a journey to prove something to ourselves.
Like, sure.
We want to maybe prove others wrong. We maybe want to, you know, accomplish things. Maybe there's a money drive or a status or something we're hoping to get out of it. But there's also usually this deep sort of personal thing of like, I just need to, for my own sanity, I need to prove I can do this thing that I think I can do. And so tell me about what that was for you, maybe what that story or what some of those emotions were before, and then how that flipped.
Absolutely. There's a couple of those. Going back to when I had a full-time job and was doing consulting work, a part of me just wanted to prove to everybody that I was smart. So I was like, oh, I know how to code. Oh, this data science thing, this is hot. Oh, I'm a data scientist now, and I'm implementing very complex algorithms to solve real business problems. And then I got over that. I was like, okay, I proved to myself that I'm smart. And a part of it's maturity, not feeling like you have to prove anything to anybody. And also part of that's achievement. Like, okay, I got to that hill. So now it's behind me, and pat on my back and move on. But on the entrepreneurial side, I mean, even sitting here relaxed, doing this podcast with you 2-3 years ago, I'd probably be shivering and nervous, and it's just this and comfort in and confidence in what you're building. And in the beginning, you're not confident and you're building this thing and you're like, does anybody want this? Do they care? And the validation comes so slowly, especially with software development. Like software businesses, they're services businesses, and you already have the skills and you're giving services. So that is its own beast. That's really hard. But software, it takes so long before you have a product that's like worth even demoing. And so it's the confidence that comes with the patience too. Like 2-3 years ago, we were selling a half baked product, and now it's functional. Now people are using it. Now it's worth its salt. So that's where some of that insecurity and limiting beliefs get released. And additionally, it's exposing myself to entrepreneurs that have sold businesses and working closely with them. And I say this with the utmost respect and love. If they can do it, I can do it. And so that, really get it. Pre-help classes is paid. Yeah. So once you're in the inner working, at least that's what I needed. I needed to see up close and personal how someone else had done it and is doing it. And I'm like, oh, well, if you can pull it off doing it like this, I can certainly pull this off. So that's what's led me to where I'm at today.
That's a good insight. I mean, that's something that one of the reasons I really like starting my career in consulting is because I got a chance to work with so many executives, founders, leaders, that it just humanized those things that I had kind of put on a pedestal before. And I was like, oh God, you guys are just normal people figuring it out as you go. Like, and a lot of the stuff you're doing, like, I could do as good or better. Not to be prideful, but just like, just to humanize it and be like, yeah, it's not as unattainable as it might have looked. If you're able to do all this with this set of skills or with these things, I'm sure I could be successful. And so that's another pattern I've seen. And it's one of the reasons that proximity is so important, to see people that have done it, to see their life, see their whole life, not just the news stories, the headlines, the flashy, the big raise, the big exit, the whatever. See the actual day to day and go, oh, you're living a normal life. Like, you got kids, you've got a family or priorities or other commitments. You got stuff you're juggling. You got baggage. You got bad things happening randomly. Emotional difficulty, like whatever, all the stuff every human goes through. You got all of that. You got your own flaws, you got your own weaknesses, and you're still making it through and you're just continuing. And it's like that, I think that's such a powerful insight. And the other thing that I really like in what you shared is just this idea that there's so much of it that comes back to who we are inside. And like, it takes a while to do the work on yourself to realize what you're capable of. And like, once you have that certainty inside yourself of I am capable of this, so many other things change for you, as opposed to waiting on someone else to change something for you, waiting for the circumstance to change, waiting for the environment to change, and just doing that work on yourself. And then once you do that, it just bleeds out into everything else. And now you're coming from a position of confidence instead of this position of like, am I good enough? Am I, you know, the whole imposter syndrome? And is this the right way? And so, yeah, anyways, I think that's super, super insightful, because it's something that a lot of new leaders or new founders end up going through.
Yeah, I think we all think to ourselves, oh, if I had access to enormous quantity of capital, or if only I knew someone at this investment bank, or if only I was continuing on a family business, you know. And you just got to give up on all. I used to have such a chip on my shoulder that I didn't have that leg up. I waitressed all through college. I went to UCLA. Some people's college was not the best time of my life. I was working 30, 40 hours a week and just trying to pass my classes. My adventure in Asia was kind of my chance to live it up and do college right. And, you know, anything that you're using as a reason or to be more harsh excuse not to start, that's you limiting yourself, and you need to own that, right? And it was a tough pill for me to swallow for a long time, and I had to get over it.
Yeah, they'll have to wake up to and get over probably many times in our life, right? Because it's a pattern that repeats. You end up creating new limiting beliefs and then having to overcome those. And a lot of one of the big breakthroughs for me as I've grown our business is realizing how often the limiting beliefs are not the negative. They're not the I can't do it, I'm not good enough. Those are the ones that are easy to see. And then you're like, I'm just limiting myself needlessly. Let me get rid of these. like a lot of people do a good job of identifying those as they mature and starting to get rid of those. The ones that are so pernicious and difficult are the ones that actually serve you or that are really beneficial to you and helped you achieve something and that you relied on to get to where you are, that now are the exact reason you won't get to the next place you want to go. And so that cycle of reevaluating is just painful because like some of those chip on your shoulder things that you were carrying around are the very reason you went out and did things that got you to the point of being an entrepreneur. But if you hold on to them, you'll never be able to get to the next level. And so then you have to look and go, okay, now I got to set some of these aside. I've outgrown these. They're not serving me anymore. I'm letting them go. And then you replace them with better beliefs. You're going to live those. And then those, you're going to get to the point where those exact beliefs are now the reason that you're not getting to the next level. And so like that cycle is why I think entrepreneurs are always so focused on growth or personal development, is because you end up realizing how much it's like this game where no matter how good you get at it, the next step is going to require more. The next part of the journey is going to require growth, evolution, new mindsets, new beliefs. And so a lot of times people in your life might look at you and go, oh, you changed. Oh, you're not that waitress I knew in college. You know, you're not that same person. It's like, yeah, I did. And I'm going to change a lot more. So if that doesn't work for our relationship, this might not be a good relationship, because that's the journey I'm on, is long-term growth. And for some people, that's really scary and that pushes certain people out of your life. But for the right people, they're going to be attracted into your life based on that. That funding you want, those people are going to be looking for that. The opportunities you want, the partners you want, all that, they're going to be like, oh, here's someone who gets it, who's really willing to grow and confront this. And so anyways, it's a great example that you've set there, and that it's a great lesson for the audience.
Yeah, and all of that was so well said just now. I know that the audience, many of the listeners aren't watching us, so I want to say out loud that I was just nodding the whole time in agreement. Like, it's the people that you partner with or that you surround yourself with. I hear a lot of times like, oh, well, if someone tells you no, or they think it's a bad idea or highlights risk to you. I don't have any people like that in my life by design. And now the people I keep around me are the type of people who are also brave and take seats at new tables. And you know, you hear this your whole life. You are the company that you keep. And I do have relationships with people who have very different lifestyles and goals. And whether it's history or compatibility that keeps us together, there's a lot of love there. But when it comes to career goals, that's a very different tribe.
Yeah, for sure. So as you have then gotten to this point now where you're ready to go all in, you know, grow the business, you're excited, it sounds like, for that next phase, what are the biggest sort of goals you have or things that you're focused on now to take that next step? What's going to be different for you, and what are you focused on?
What's going to be different for me? Everything, especially how I allocate my time. Having a job means I have to prioritize who's paying me, right? And now that I'm all in on myself and soon to be investors, that means my priority is the business that I'm building, which is wild and so exciting, because when I'm working on my business, I start at 9 a.m. and all of a sudden it's 6 p.m. I'm like, what happened? Versus working for someone else and doing all these tasks that are like, 20 minutes goes by and it feels like it's been 3 hours. So not only will the tasks that I'm doing day to day change dramatically, but my experience of those tasks, like I'm going to be in much more aligned with my true self because I've worked so hard to achieve this. And so a lot's going to change, and a lot I can't predict. I don't have a crystal ball. I have a lot of hard lessons in front of me. I have to grow the team. I have to train both customers and said team. Those are things that I haven't done with my business. So learning new communication strategies, leadership strategies, and having to closely be very strategic and careful in who I bring into this, because just as we were saying moments ago, the people who join are make or break for this. So those are a few things on the horizon for me as I go full time on this.
I just want to honor and celebrate what is so great about you that I've learned just in this 40 minutes. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful things, but I just love the combination. I love this in any founder, is a good combination of humility with sort of confidence and ambition. You know, that blend is, it's really hard to get right, but I just love how honest and open you are about the things that you're going to have to learn, about the areas that you're trying to grow. But at the same time, a very evident resolve, confidence, and commitment. And that's such a powerful combo for the audience to listen to and just understand, because you'll see founders that are hyper confident and potentially delusional or arrogant, and you'll see people that are so humble that they're never going to be able to get to where they need to go. And there's kind of like this tug, this paradoxical tug between the two, where it's like, if I want to be successful, I got to be constantly reevaluating my beliefs. I got to be reevaluating myself, holding myself accountable first, realizing where I'm the limitation or where I need to grow. But I also can't have a pity party and sit there and get down on myself. I got to be confident that I've figured it out in the past and I've been successful. I'm going to keep being successful. I'm going to get there. And so anyways, that's a really unique balance. So I just wanted to celebrate you for doing such a great job of that. And I'm excited to see how this all develops for you. So with that being said, I want to maybe transition to a couple final questions here and then we'll wrap up. First off, just on personal interest, I'm curious, since you've moved around so much and you've done kind of the digital nomad side, have you used that? Like, is that more for pleasure of like, you like being in these different countries and traveling, or have you used that to sort of arbitrage and make money in the US, lower living expenses elsewhere? Has that been a form of leverage for you where you've kind of used it for financial purposes, or in what ways has that skill set that you developed been valuable to your life?
Very much the former. I have not figured out lowering my expenses and strategically being in certain places for a certain amount of time. I'm definitely not there yet where it's even worthwhile doing that. I live in Los Angeles. It's super expensive. Living in Hong Kong is also really expensive. I definitely haven't figured that out. But the joy in the travel and seeing new places and doing new things, I really am passionate about understanding what motivates people. And a big part of understanding people's motivations is understanding where they come from. And I had a huge lesson learned when I moved from California to Hong Kong, because in California, we like to think that we are open-minded and diverse and. But it's a completely different story. What we don't appreciate as Americans, or I will say this just for myself, everyone that isn't originally from here is assimilating here. And to go on someone else's turf and then have to learn their rules to abide by, and as I should, was a life-changing experience. So now that I've been that fish out of water, I can be a better colleague, boss, leader, friend to many different cultures, religions. And so that's the extreme thing I did. I always, even when I was at UCLA, took classes on different religions. And so that's where, to answer your question, that drive to spend a significant amount of time around the world comes from. I just really enjoy appreciating people.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that's extremely high leverage, because if you can understand people and you can appreciate people, then you're going to be like at a more effective friend and a more effective leader. Certainly in a business context, you'll be able to get better results. And I had a privilege of living in a few different countries when I was younger, and I really think everyone should do it. I think it's the most eye-opening thing you can do. It had the most dramatic impact on my politics, on my attitudes, on my everything, just in that it opened my mind up so much from realizing just how much of a bubble I was in America. Not that that's bad. I still love America. It's my country. It's where I'm from. It's where I'll always live. But there's so many things, like you said, that since everyone assimilates to us when they come here, for the most part, you don't know what normal means until you go to another place where normal means something else, and you get to experience that for yourself and just experience totally different paradigms in all those arenas: social, interpersonal, familial, religious, political. And you're like, oh, that's normal here. That's considered extreme. That's considered acceptable or unacceptable. And very eye-opening experience. I think a lot of problems we have in our country today would be very different and maybe not nearly as extreme if people lived elsewhere first and came back and then had better perspective on our country relative to the world and just really could look at problems with a broader view and say, oh, I've experienced this through more lenses than just here. I think it's really decision-making. So, all right, with that being said, as we are looking to wrap up the episode here, would love to hear any thoughts you have about AI, anything that you're seeing in AI, if it's a big part of your business, if it's something that you're worried about, concerned about, excited about as a form of leverage, if there's anything that you want to dive into with that, then I'd love to spend some time on that. And then if not, we'll close out with kind of where people can find you.
Sure. Well, being a data scientist, this is a subject that I know a lot about. And I am glad that you asked me because without a shadow of a doubt, AI is leverage and nothing to be afraid of. AI will not replace you. People who are good at using it will. So invest your time in learning how to use these tools. And remember, computers were scary. The internet was scary. We're going to see jobs that we never dreamed of come out of this technical revolution. So when you start hearing and seeing these doomsday things, think critically about how this is a computer that doesn't understand power or money or love, or it doesn't have a consciousness, it doesn't have its own motivations. So it's mimicking those behaviors, but it doesn't intrinsically have those behaviors itself. So get to know it. Don't be afraid. Don't wait, because you'll get quickly left behind. And AI is something to leverage. It is your friend.
I love it. Yeah, I think there's maybe two big opportunities that people should be aware of from my perspective that is in line with what you just said, which is one, it's going to accelerate speed. And if people, so just like you said, don't wait, speed is everything. And as it accelerates things, things will move faster. And now your ability to keep up with that is a massive advantage. Even if you never do anything to add to AI, to build AI, you don't have to, you can just be a pure consumer. Just keeping up to the speed of innovation is going to be something a lot of people don't want to do. And the second skill, or the second piece of that, is learning, being willing to learn new things. The future is much less scary when you understand that not that long ago, the majority of Americans were agriculture workers. So if you were just willing to learn about computers, you're fine. The people that were unwilling are maybe sitting in rural America just angry and don't have a lot of money. So there's some people that if you're unwilling to change, unwilling to learn, and your job gets disrupted, well, now that's scary. But if you're just willing to learn, willing to keep up with the speed, you're already ahead of so many people. And then the second skill set with that is that the interpersonal side, at least in the next 10, 20, 30 years, I mean, hey, who knows if there's some future where AI is very human-like, but at the end of the day, there's going to be a period of time, and who knows how long, where the soft skills, the human skills, are going to be increasingly at a premium. Because if AI can write code better than humans or as good as humans, if it can commoditize some of the technical skills and some of the other things that previously were really valuable, well, now I'm really just choosing who I want to work with, the people I want to be with, the people who have the beliefs, the values, the empathy, the things that I connect with and that are meaningful to me. And so developing your soft skills, if you're like a hardcore programmer today, it's like, great, add the soft skills. Don't just lean on I'll always be the best programmer. Add the soft skills. And so if you have those things, then I think you have nothing to fear. In line with what you said, it's like those are skills everyone can add. There's no limitation, education level, nothing. Just add the soft skills and then be willing to keep up and learn new things and that'll open up a lot of doors.
Hey, before you go, I have a small request. Our mission is to empower as many people as possible to maximize their potential through the power of leverage. Could you help us in this mission by leaving a review on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube? And if you know just one person who would benefit from today's episode, would you please share it with them? Your support means the world to us, and we are thrilled to have you in the community. Thank you for being a part of our journey and helping us grow. You can find show notes for today's show and past shows at lessonsinleverage.com, which also has links to connect with me personally and connect with our various podcast channels across your favorite social networks. A big thanks to Solve.cloud, who sponsored this episode. They're a group of expert consultants that help SaaS and financial services companies to implement, optimize, and manage Salesforce.com. They can help you with custom integration solutions and are helping customers to implement some of the most important generative AI technologies. You can find them at Solve.cloud. That's solved.cloud is the URL. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon.